History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship
this call is being recorded.
Of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get a good education, follow your mind, follow the dictates of your conscience, do what you think and feel has to be done in order for you to achieve, and you'll be able to succeed. I really believe that.
Do you think that young African Americans feel hopeful?
No.
No, do you think that is self-defeating if you're hopeless?
Yes.
So what can be done to make young people see that they can be hopeful?
Or you can constantly lecture to them and constantly answer their queries and their questions about things. But so much of it has to do with the kind of environment in which they're reared.
Yes. Then, of course, young people are bombarded with negative images,
In
different, from different forms
That's
of media.
Right.
So that those repetitive messages perhaps are making them feel hopeless or defining them.
That's right.
That they believe these definitions.
Yes.
What can be done, do you think? What can be done to counter these repetitive negative messages and images?
I still say that basically you always have to go back to the environment in which they're being reared. You always have to go back to that. I know of young people, I had to get a few of them straightened out a few weeks ago. Don't give me that answer. Don't tell me that. They didn't want to get high marks in their class because it means that they think they're it. They just want to be mediocre individuals. And I told them straight, there's too much mediocrity in this country. Too much.
Yes.
You've got to excel because...
Up, you mighty race. You can accomplish what you will. One race, one aim, one destiny. Hotep, my brothers and sisters, welcome this evening to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers, and it is an honor and a pleasure to be with you here this evening. Thank you for joining us. We have a very exciting and dynamic program, really wonderful discussion that we are going to embark upon in just a few minutes. We're going to talk a little bit about the subject of what is it about white racism that African people are not understanding. And we're going to have the notes from the African Brain Trust as we consider this notion. What is it about white racism that African people are not understanding? And we're going to discuss that today, and with our panel, we have a panel of individuals that are going to come on, and they're going to share with us their thoughts. We have some wonderful backup material from our ancestors that I would like for you to listen to as well, that kind of speak to all of this. We had a recent occurrence, as you know. The 45th president has made some ridiculous statements. And the point is, I think, what makes us get upset about that? Like, that's unusual in America. Do we forget who we are and where we are and how we got here? So we're spending a lot of energy arguing and worrying about what he said and what Mitch McConnell says and what Nancy Pelosi is doing and all of that. Brothers and sisters, we have got to understand that you are being bamboozled. You're being hoodwinked. And it's a part of the agenda to get us off our track and focus on things that are just not relevant to what we need to do for our liberation. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight and some other things like that. And as I said, we have a wonderful group of people that are going to discuss and join with us. The Black Reality Think Tank, as you know, airs every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. We are a part of the Time for an Awakening network as well, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio network, which, by the way, is the number one Black Talk Radio system in America. And I am so happy to be a part of that. We just received a rating a national rating for that. And we have some wonderful other programs that are on the on this network as well. And I'm going to tell you about those in just a few minutes and who they are and what they do. So we are so happy that you're here, and we ask that you continue to support us. If there are questions that you have, you can call us here. This is a call-in format. Our number is area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215-490-9832. And we welcome your comments. We welcome you joining our discussion. And also, you can just use it to listen, as well as access our other programs that are on the air as well. All of our programs are archived. And so at the conclusion of our program, within the next couple of days after, you're able to go on the website, which is www.timeforanawakening.com, and you can access any of our previous programs. And you can do that 24/7. And we surely, surely highly recommend that you do go back and listen to anything that you might have missed or you only got through it partially. So we welcome you again. We welcome you to do that. Again, www.timeforanawakening.com. Our phone number is area code 215-490-9832. And so you can make that call and tune into our switchboard, and we'd be glad to bring you on to let you make any comments you wish to make. So, with that, let me just briefly mention that we do have some other dynamic programs that come on the Time for an Awakening Media Network. One of the programs that I'd like to mention is a program produced by the sponsor of the Black Reality Think Tank. Brother Oshieme Adelabu has a program called African Perspectives, and that's a part of the Motherland Media Network. The Motherland Media Network produces African Perspective. It also produces another program that I'm going to mention, and it produces and supports the Black Reality Think Tank. So again, that program airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. And then on Monday and Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., a very dynamic program called the Black People Matrix. And the host of that is Brother Franklin Jones. And he is going to be joining us this evening. And we are going to engage our conversation with him as well. The Black People Matrix is also sponsored by Motherland Media Network and dynamic talk format. I think you would be truly welcome to listen to that. And by all means, if you want to go back into the archive and listen to some of the previous programs, you can do that as well by accessing the website at www.timeforanawakening.com. So Brother Jones's program comes on every Monday and Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And all of these are Eastern times as well. Acres of Diamond, which is also on Monday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time. Acres of Diamond. Let's Buy Back 365 airs also on Monday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then, as I said, the Black Reality Think Tank airs on Tuesday, 8 to 10. And then Revive, which is Proof of Consciousness. And that program airs on Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m., from 8 to 10 p.m. On Wednesday. And then Relationships is another program that airs on Thursday evenings from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Relationships with Joy and Troy. With Joy and Troy, Relationships, Thursday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. As you know, we must begin to redevelop our relationships with the male and female. That's one of the major problems in terms of Black family work group. So that program gives an excellent dialogue, talk about some of those issues that face the African community in that way. And then on Friday evenings from 8 to 10, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, two wonderful, dynamic brothers, excellent program, many strong, powerful guests. Program airing out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He is the executive director for the Time for an Awakening Network that we all participate on. So that program airs on Friday evenings from 8 to 10. And then again on Sunday evenings from 7 to 10, Time for an Awakening. Again, excellent dynamic discussion, excellent guests. And so we encourage you to listen to Time for Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturday, Troy Wilmore, Sports Talk, Saturday Sports Talk, which airs on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. 10 a.m. to 12 noon is called Saturday Sports Talk. And that's our lineup for right now. We will be encouraged that there are going to be more that will be joining us in the months to come, or even maybe the weeks to come. So we are so appreciative of this network and what is happening with this very dynamic system, Time for an Awakening, as well as the Black Talk Radio Network. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to begin our conversation, but first I would like to do what we always do every week, which is our ancestral profile. We honor our ancestors. In the words of the great Fannie Lou Hamer, we must always praise the bridges that brought us over. And so we vehemently support that, and we do that with ourselves each week. Today I am going to focus on an ancestor that kind of really speaks to some of the work that we are trying to do here and what we're doing in a lot of the Motherland Media programs. Africa Perspectives, Black Reality Think Tank, Black People Matrix, what Brother Elliot, Brother Richard are doing. This brother speaks to all of that. And he has recently moved to that ancestral realm. And we are going to truly miss him and his work and his vision. But he is definitely a part of what we want to do. It's this particular obituary comes was published in a newspaper that's done by our great sister Marumba Ani, and this particular article was after the paper is called The African World, and this was listed in there. And the brother that wrote the article was or the sister was Olisa Yatolokum, Olisa Yatolokum. And the person that we are going to highlight today for our ancestor profile is Kobe Kazembe Kalonji Kambon. Kobe Kazembe Kalonji Kambon. After 75 journeys around the sun, Baba Kobe Kazembe Kalonji Kambon, an intellectual giant and the founding father of the African psychology movement, has joined the ancestors, whom he revered so deeply. While his accomplishments in the field are extensive, it is perhaps most notable that he developed the world's only known African-centered psychology program in 1996. Kobe Kazembe Kalonji Kambon. Brother Kambon lived his life in service to the ancestors and the African community. He gave all of himself in his scholarship to building the African-centered psychology program at Florida A&M University to his students and to his family. He had a tremendous integrity, courage, and the strongest work ethic that I have ever known. He was a perfectionist and required every attempt toward perfection of his students as well. He was a standard that many had difficulty living up to. Baba Kobe was unwavering in his commitment to African people, and he was unapologetic for his Black nationalism and Pan-African position. In the development of the psychology department at Florida A&M University, his vision and strategic plan was to create a curriculum and environment that was based on the African worldview, on the African worldview, and to have every course taught from an African-centered perspective. He understood the worldview's framework to be that which provides disciplinary autonomy for African psychology and an interdisciplinary tool of analysis in Africana studies in general. Furthermore, Brother Cambone, Dr. Cambone, ensured a Black nationalist analysis of racism, the resulting Ma'afa and oppression in general. That analysis included an African center assessment of our particular responses to those forces, things like racism, oppression, slavery. Furthermore, he utilized African psychology as a tool for liberation and required historical knowledge of revolutionary figures and movements that contributed to that effort. Aside from the graduate and undergraduate psychology programs at FAMU, Baba Kobe created a holistic Pan-African experience at the university. All of the extracurricular programs and activities reflected an African-centered thrust. It was an energy that was apparent to the eye and spirit when one entered the psychology department. The halls were draped in kente cloth, African symbols and images everywhere. There was a wall of distinction in features, pictures, and descriptions of prominent African-centered psychologists who have contributed significantly to the movement. There is also an annual African Psychology Theme Week that features students, presentations, workshops, panels, and orientation to the focus of the department. There are several student-led organizations, including the psychology department, Sci-Chi, and the Student Alliance for Cultural Development, called SACD. There is also a chapter of the Student Circle of the Association of Black Psychologists. The Department of Psychology also hosts the Imhotep Research Forum, which is an interdisciplinary student research conference. All of these activities and traditions were initiated by Baba Kobe as an outgrowth of his Pan-Africanist ideology. Baba Kobe did not build the psych department and his programs alone. He had the assistance and support of a cadre of warrior scholars, most of whom he selected, recruited, and supported for these positions. One of his closest comrades in that regard was Mama Huberta Jackson Lohman, who shared his Pan-African perspective and on whom he could always count for organizational support. The department was also built on the scholarship and the revolutionary contributions of influential elders and ancestors, including Nana Marcus Messiah Garvey, Nana Barbara Wright, Nana Jacob Carruthers, Nana Chancellor Williams, Nana John Henry Clark, and Nana Amos Wilson. Baba Kobe retired from FAMU in 2010 after completing 30 years of service as a tenured full professor of psychology. His retirement initiated the tradition of the African Black Psychology Conference, which annually focuses on the work of the African psychologist who has contributed to the growth of African psychology movement. Aside from his personal work, a central part of his legacy is in the lives he touched through his work in the African world community and the students that he trained. In terms of his personal scholarship, Baba Kobe Cambone authored the first comprehensive, unedited textbook on African-centered psychology, which was entitled African/Black Psychology in the American Context, an African-centered approach. I repeat, The name of that textbook was African/Black Psychology in the American Context, An African-Centered Approach. He has written several other books, including The African Personality in America, in which he develops a theory of the African personality and explains in as being fundamentally spiritual in nature. This book has been tremendously influential in rescuing and resurrecting the minds of young African scholars from the depths of Eurocentric white supremacist propaganda posing as objective scholarship. Baba Kobe not only critiques the Euro view of reality, but creates a template for the process of re-Africanization. Baba Kobe coined the term cultural misorientation, and he published his ideas in a book entitled Cultural Misorientation. The greatest threat to the survival of the Black race in America, he indicated. He also published Cambone's Reader in Liberation Psychology. He authored over 80 scholarly publications, including articles, position papers, and book chapters. Baba Kobe's textbooks are widely used in the teaching of African-centered Black psychology courses around the world. In addition, he developed several analytical tools, including the African Self-Conscious Scale, which was called sometimes the ASC Scale, the World Views Scale, and the Cultural Misorientation Scale. These instruments were designed to measure healthy personality, diagnose psychological disorder, and assess social variables that relate to and characterize the African experience in the context of a racial environment. Kobe Cambone served as the 14th president of the Association of Black Psychologists from 1982 to 1983, and also he held several other local, regional, and national offices within the organization. He was also a vocal and well-respected member of ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. NCBS, which is the National Council of Black Studies, and ASALH, the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, founded by the great, late Carter G. Woodson. What is most important, however, from the perspective of the world African sovereignty, is his love for his people. And his work as an elder in several of our communities. Bobby Kova considered Bobby Wright to be his Jigna. Nana Clark, Nana Jacob Carruthers, and Dr. Anderson Thompson were his most respected scholar activists. Nana Amos Wilson was a good friend, whom he greatly respected, and with whom he had many valuable discussions. Perhaps among recent African warriors, Baba Kobe most respected and admired Nana Frances Cress Wilson, and was committed to making sure that her work was fully appreciated and used by our people in the war to build a Pan-African world order. Like Nana Frances, Nana John Henry Clark, Nana Bobby Wright, Nana Bafur Baba Asa Hilliard, and Nana Jedi Shemsu, Jacob Carruthers, Bobby Kobe's influence went far beyond the halls of the academy or the classroom. He will continue to have a tremendous influence on the world African sovereignty movement through the consistent and forceful expression of his ideological clarity. Baba Kobe never played it safe, but could be counted on to Africanize any academic or professional selfing in which African people were involved, forcing us to choose to be African. Those of us who had the privilege of being taught and trained by Baba Kobe share a special bond. It is an energy that is often apparent to others. When I left FAMU and went to do doctoral work at Georgia State, I was honored to work briefly with Nana Asa Hilliard, who was impressed by the fact that I had been trained by Baba Kobe. My association with Baba Kobe opened many doors for me. It was closed, some others, because he was an absolutely unapologetic warrior for African people, and that made some people uncomfortable. An important aspect of Baba Kobe's legacy was in what I call the Neo-Cambonians, the Neo-Cambonians. A Neo-Cambonian is a scholar and former student of Baba Kobe Cambone, whose scholarship reflects his theoretical orientation. Neo-Cambonians are warriors who work in services to the ancestors and see their scholarship and teaching responsibilities as instruments of political warfare. At his homegoing celebration, Mama Marimba Ani told the gathering that Baba Kobe was a race man who always confronted the enemy. She reminded us that he was not yet made his transition, but he is beginning a very important transition, that of Luvemba, a spiritual journey in which he will be strengthened in preparation for Musani, spiritual rebirth. And this is a tribute to Dr. Baba Kobe Campbell. And again, as I indicated, this was found in the a newspaper that is edited by our great ancestor, Marimba Ani. It is available, I think, online, I believe. It's called the African World. And the African is spelled with the F, the African World. And the author of this particular article Olisa Toloku. Olisa Toloku. And this is very appropriate for what we are doing today. We are going to very clearly discuss some of the ideas and the principles of that work. I wanted to, when I first decided to do the program tonight and what we were going to do, I at one time wanted to I was going to name it Pavlov's Dogs, Skinner's Rats. And I was using that because these were two Eurocentric scholars who had created a system of conditioning that obviously could be used on humans, getting people to respond against their own will, and to getting them to do things. In the case of Pablo, he had created something to make dogs saliva at the ringing of a bell. So where, in a sense, he was in control of their emotions. And Skinner had a rat box, and he would test rats in that box and getting them to do things. And even if they crossed an electrical field and felt pain, that they just kept on going and stopped doing it. This is a form of psychological conditioning, and I just wanted to use, but then I thought, no, I need to look at something more African-centered in terms of doing that, because I mean, even though sometimes we are programmed to do crazy things, we still, however, need to look at this from a more spiritual realm, because, you know, as we are case, we are spiritual people, and we need to look at it. So I thought about asking the question, you know, why do we keep letting racism vex us in the way it does? It's ugly. We know that. But a lot of times, my brothers and sisters, it's being done on purpose. It's being done to force you to respond in ways that they are in control. So when Trump and all of his cronies and the rest of that garbage pool out of the White House do these things, they're, a lot of times this is mind games, and they're getting you to vex your spirit and take the focus off of the real changes that you need to be doing and focus on their work. And at that point, they got you. You're in control. It's like Malcolm said, you've been hoodwinked. You're being bamboozled. This is sight games. And then what you have is you've got some think tank or some strategist group sitting somewhere over in the corner, sort of cataloging the responses and putting them together so that the next time when somebody runs for office, they could kind of guide them and lead them into how to run your campaign and the things you can do to get people to listen to you. Because when Trump tweets and he uses that Twitter thing, everybody goes right to it. And you may not really agree. What is he saying now? What kind of message is he saying now? And so he's got you. He's ringing the bell. He's making you saliva. He's running Skinner's rat box on you and on us. And so what I wanted to do tonight is raise the question is, why do we keep doing that? Because our brain trust and our ancestors and people like Baba Cambone and others and all of those he's trained and others who have followed in his footsteps, as he called it, the Neo-Cambonians, have given us what's going on. They have told us that. I was on the phone today with one of our guests who was going to be with us, Brother James Pugh, and we were talking about particularly one very powerful book that was written by our brother, called Stamped from the Beginning, Kehinde X. And we did a program on Brother Kehinde a couple months back, and we even played a couple of his lectures. And it was talking about, and what he's doing is he's telling you, and what he did is researched skillfully and very carefully where all of this comes from, the roots of it. So if you talk about ending racism and ending all of those things, then you don't understand the roots of it. You don't understand where it's coming from. If what Trump said bothers you to the place that you're going to join the movement to impeach him, then you're not understanding racism real well. And so tonight I wanted to talk about that. It's like my brother that produces the program called The Black Matrix. You're being manipulated here, and we need to bring that out. Talk about why. Invite you on in some way to indicate what your thoughts are on why we are doing this and how this is being presented. We've had some wonderful books that have been written over the years with dealing with this psychology stuff and the origins of racism and where it's coming from and why they say what they say and what it means. But obviously it has nothing to do with our liberation. And so I think that we need to rethink ourselves and rethink our efforts as we begin to do that. One of the individuals that we want to talk about tonight is Dr. Derek Bell. Dr. Bell wrote a book called Faces at the Bottom of the Well. And Dr. Bell's major thesis in that book was that racism is permanent. It's not going anywhere in America. It's just not going anywhere. Dr. Bell said in that book, he said, progress in American race relations is largely a mirage, obscuring the fact that whites continue consciously and unconsciously to do all their power to ensure their domination and maintain control. And that's all that's about. And that's what they're doing. But we are letting it vex us. And we're letting it vex us in a way that it throws us off track. And we lose our eyes, we take our eyes off the prize. We have to remember of why we came here. Our first entry into the American system was on the auction block. That's where we came. We came via the auction block. And what we do sometimes is we lose sight of the auction block and start looking at some other stuff. But you have to keep your eyes, as the song said in the Civil Rights Movement, on the prize. And the prize is not a Mercedes-Benz. The prize is not some big 35 mansion house on the lakefront. your view needs to stay on that auction block and let that generate you. That's sort of your energy base. That's your arc. You know how in the biblical stories, and the story of David, where you touch the ark. Well, what they were touching, what that ark represented and symbolized, was the energy of their ancestors. That's what that was. That was the energy. So when you touched that ark and you weren't prepared, the ark would kill you. It would knock you off because you weren't supposed to touch it like that. And the ark for us is that auction block. That's the blood of our ancestors in there. That's those that have died and gone on to make it possible for us to do what we're doing today, and which is to build and prepare that next generation. And we got to keep our eyes focused on that. In the beginning of the program, the voice that you heard was our great ancestor, Shirley Chisholm. Raised some very dynamic questions, points, made some very dynamic points about what is it that we must tell our young people about that. And telling them to end racism or do these things, that's not the goal. That's not the objective that we need to have. So we've got two brothers that I'm getting ready to bring on now that I want to begin to talk about a little bit about this. We have other members of the audience. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I have got my good brother, Dr. Bruce Bridges, on the line. I'm not sure. Dr. Bridges wrote a book called Recapturing the African Mind. And we have often referred to that here on this program. And we want to surely bring him on. Because if we're going to recapture the African mind, listening to Trump or Mitch McConnell is not going to help us at all. That's just stuff to throw you off track. So with that, I have one of our regular guests who is always around with us there, and I really appreciate his work and his input, and he's going to be here with us tonight. That's Mr. James Pugh from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Mr. Pugh. How are you?
Yes, good evening, Doc. Good. I'm pretty good.
Great. And also with us is, and I think I do have the right number here, is a host of one of our programs here on the Motherland Media, Time for an Awakening Network. And he has done a wonderful job of his program and talking. I think he has a very strong internet site presence that he can tell you about. His name is Brother Franklin Jones, and the name of his program is the Black People Matrix. And so we're happy to have him on today as well. Brother Jones, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. It's an honor to be on your program.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, Brother Pugh, Brother Jones, how did the Trump statement hit you? Did that have any effect on your thinking and on the work that you were doing, Brother Pugh?
You mean the most recent statement?
Yeah, the most recent statement about telling the women to go back to where they came from and some of
that. Right, to go back where they came from?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was significant. Yeah, I thought the statement was significant because, you know, what had happened was that Nancy Pelosi had a conflict with AOC. And what do they call them now? Ilhan Omar and whatnot. In other words, Nancy Pelosi had a conflict with them, and the conflict was about it was pretty clear that Pelosi was not fighting Trump. So what I thought was significant about this was that Trump came to the defense of Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
And you know that Trump is only about himself. So that means the only reason he's coming to the defense of Pelosi is that she's doing something in his interest, which was precisely the point that AOC and them were making. So I thought that what this event did is it forces Pelosi's hand. She's going to have to move to the left.
Okay. All right. Brother Franklin, is this the act of bamboozling, being hoodwinked? Would you call it that?
The way I actually didn't respond to it. I passively listened to it, but I don't allow it to be a distraction. When I see the Republicans and the Democrats as two birds, two wings of the same bird.
There you go.
So I just kind of I don't allow it to be a distraction from the original message. Like yourself and the program you're talking about, I'm more focused on addressing the African mindset.
Right.
And that's what I'm directly focused on. So I watch the news to see what's going on, but I don't allow it to affect me.
Right. Let me ask you this.
Can I speak to that directly?
Sure, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, I'm interested in addressing the African mindset. And I consider, three mindsets. There are people who look at the current world as the best of all possible worlds. There's another group who look at the current world as the only feasible world. And then there's a third group who look at the current world as suboptimal, something they can change. But the specific rhetorics and the specific arguments that are fashionable at a given time and in a given region changes. And so it's important to understand, what's on people's mind and how they're thinking about stuff. To me, I think it's critical to understand, what's happening in the world, because that kind of tells you what you're working with.
Okay. How do you see that, Brother Franklin?
I understand the brother's position. Excuse me, before I continue. Can you please restate your brother's name? We'll talk to you. Will your name again, please, brother?
Q. Mm-hmm.
Brother Q.
Q-U-G-H.
Okay,
brother. U-G-H. Mm-hmm.
Okay, brother Q. I respect your position, and in no way am I speaking in contrast or to attack you. No way at all. I respect your position. When I speak that I don't allow myself to really get caught into the politics. It's not that I'm trying to say that it is wrong to do so. I fully respect that senior position. I don't allow it to be a distraction, and I am focused on. I do believe there's lots of propaganda, a lot of back and forth that keeps us distracted from focusing on things that is essential to Black liberation. And I believe Donald Trump is one of those things. Many distractions. The radio on CNN has increased for him. They've made millions of dollars more in profit because of Donald Trump news. So. I don't allow myself to truly get consumed into the bickering between the Republicans and the Democrats, because the reality is this, and which has not been addressed. Although the white society portrays itself as the ethical and moral standing and professional equality for all of their citizens, in reality, they are secretly unrelentingly committed to the preservation of the nation's white dominance. And this necessitated systems we put in place to protect the nation's white dominance and to suppress Black Black people. So what I'm hearing, what's on the news, what I'm hearing in the media, my concern is what's going on behind the scenes by the shadow government.
Right.
And I recognize that people who in the barbershop who's talking about Trump all the time, talking about the beef between Republicans and Democrats, their minds are consumed by this back and forth, and they're taken away from addressing what's being done to our people. And that's why I passively listen to what's going on. With the government back and forth, it doesn't address what's going on with our people. That's what I meant.
Okay, heard that. Brother Pugh, we had a dynamic conversation this afternoon, and we were talking about Brother Kehinde X's book, Stamped from the Beginning. So our thought, both you and I, our thoughts were that all of these guys were stamped from the beginning anyway. Why don't you, would you be willing to just explain a little bit about what that stamp from beginning relates to what we are talking about here from your understanding? Would you be willing to do that?
Yes. And in fact, it relates directly to, I forget now what my other guest, what his name is now. What's his name?
Brother Jones, Brother Franklin Jones.
Yes. Brother Jones. Okay. This relates directly. You know, the conflict between Nancy Pelosi and AOC and Ilhan Omar and Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib, the
conflict with them is precisely what you said, this notion of the parties being two wings of the same bird, concerned, you know, with the same goal, the preservation of white supremacy. But that's what the conflict is. In other words, it's already understood that Donald Trump, you know, his project is white supremacy. And presumably Nancy Pelosi, her project is supposed to be something other than that. And what AOC and them were doing was they were calling her out and saying that, look, you're for white supremacy by other means. And so if you're going to be serious, then you're going to have to move in another direction. And what that does is that takes us directly to Kendi's book, Stamped from the Beginning, because what he says is that if you really want to understand racism, that you need to understand that it's not simply a question that, you know, in other words, he said that there are racist people, and the alternative to racism is anti-racism. But he said that there's a third kind of racism that a lot of times goes undercover. And so so what he says is that he says, look, there are segregationists, and they believe that fundamentally black people are inferior and that there's nothing that can be done about it, that this is just a natural phenomena. And then he says that there are assimilationists, and what they believe is that black people are inferior right now, but with the right kind of nurture, they can be raised up to the white standard. Now, Kendi says that both of these people are racist, but you need to understand that where they're coming from is different. And then he said the third kind of people are anti-racist, and what they believe is that, you know, that people, you know, everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and there's no real fundamental distinction to be made between any people and so on, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the overall message.
Okay.
Now, his definition of racism, I think, is pretty useful, because a lot of times, you know, you get into this kind of, you know, is Trump a racist, and did he say what he said? Is what he said racist, et cetera. And what Kendi says is that he says that fundamentally what's going on is that a human being has a certain goal that they're trying to achieve, and they have a certain policy that they want to implement to achieve that goal. And they have a certain rationalization or justification of that policy for public consumption. In other words, you know the real reason why you're doing something, but the reason you might tell me, or the reason you might, you remember, if you use some of those psychological terms about ego and superego and stuff, where, you know, you want to even hide stuff from yourself.
Right.
You may even lie to yourself and say that you're doing it for another reason. But so what he says is that what you need to do is you need to understand what are the policies that the person wants to implement. And Brother Jones says that the ultimate aim is white supremacy. So whether you get through white supremacy by being passive like Nancy Pelosi and just letting things happen, or whether you get through to white supremacy by being active like Donald Trump and making things happen, at the end of the day, what AOC is saying is you're going to end up with white supremacy.
Right.
So unless you're actually doing something, in fact, I'll just give you one final example and then end it. I was listening. I wish I could remember her name now, but there's a woman that wrote a book about radical educators, and she talked about the difference between an ally and a collaborator. And she says that an ally is somebody that might provide you resources, but a collaborator, not a collaborator, she called him a co-conspirator. She said a co-conspirator will get involved, and so this is the example she gave. You remember the woman, and my memory is blanking right now, but you remember the woman that climbed up the flagpole in South Carolina to pull the flag down?
Yep. I do. All right, Brother Pugh?
All right. Excuse me?
Are you okay? I didn't know whether you had. I thought I had lost you. Okay, but go right ahead.
Okay. What they had told the woman, what they had said they were going to do to get her down off that pole,
is they were going to electrocute the pole. And obviously that was going to kill her, right?
Right.
And so what happened was that one of her co-conspirators, he happens to be a white boy, what he did is he put his hand on the pole. So he said, if you kill her, you got to kill me.
Okay.
Now, she said, that's not an ally. That's not somebody giving you a dollar or two or cents. And that's somebody putting their own life on the line for you. Right. Now, that's a whole different level of engagement.
So that's, in other words, that's kind of like a John Brown, huh?
Precisely right. John Brown gave his funds up for you.
Right.
He didn't do it for himself. He gave it up for you.
Gave it up. Right. Exactly. Brother Jones, tell our listeners how this whole thing fits into your philosophy of the Black Matrix. Explain that for us a little bit. And how racism is considered in this diagram of things that you have created.
Yes, the way to describe it is the old system of racism had a GED, the modern system of racism, it now has a PhD. It's a much more sophisticated.
Right.
When the blatant systems of racism used in the 60s became no longer morally acceptable with changing times, it eroded America's global image, America's standing in the world. And it caused unprecedented Black protests. They recognized that they had to develop a new system as a means of controlling the Black masses. They recognized that the Kerner Commission did a study, and they found out that as Black pride grew, Black revolt grew. And they also recognized that the reason for unprecedented Black protests was a result of blatant white racism. So they developed a more modern system using mass manipulation, media manipulation, psychological warfare.
Okay.
I saw this at work firsthand when I was in Iraq. I'm a veteran of the war, a soldier.
Okay.
And when we got into Iraq, there was the PSYOPs unit, U.S. PSYOPs unit. And upon conquering the Iraqi people, we had to manipulate their minds. And I'm watching, they took over the education system. And the U.S. government, the official word from the Pentagon was that we were merely removing all mention of Saddam Hussein. But we gave them a curriculum to teach their children so we can socially engineer the minds of their children. We took over their newspapers, their television news, their radios, and we started putting out our propaganda to socially engineer the minds of the people. Because while oppressors, while people can conquer nations, they can't sustain peace with them for long unless there are systems in place against their minds. And the same system that we did in Iraq is the same thing that's happening here in the U.S. government. There were books that they had. I was reading these books they had. That the reason why, for example, the reason why Black students are denied a racially affirming curriculum right. as white students receive is because when you deny the oppressed of a fully racially affirming curriculum, this psychology assigns them to accept their subordinate place in society.
Okay.
Social engineering science describes this as instilling a value system into the minds of the oppressed that makes them comply with white dominance over their lives.
Okay.
There's an entire system. The reason why we're constantly bombarded with fraudulent negative information about ourselves, I mean, think for a second. Every study result that we see always puts whites are better than Black people.
Yes.
Now, if you look at how astronomically ridiculous it is, to have such one-sided narratives constantly favoring one group over the other, that's astronomically ridiculous. In fact, it's cartoonishly ridiculous. But the reason why it's being done is designed to instill the myth of white superiority into the minds of Black people.
Right.
When it's a science that's required for all long-term oppression. Because when people are oppressed for a long time, their collective aggression against the oppressive society will continue to grow. Until acts of rebellion and mass retribution becomes inevitable. This is a part of the human condition. And the only way to prevent this is to turn the collective aggression of the oppressed population away from the dominant society and redirect it inward against ourselves.
Right.
So the white society continually bombards with information that conveys that it's we who are our own worst enemy. And in the military, again, the military teaches this, that the most effective way to subjugate a targeted population is to mislead them to believe that their core problem is an internalized one, that their core problem lies within themselves. This turns their collective aggression from their enemy and redirects it inward against themselves.
I like
this is what's being done to us.
I like that. I like that. That's exactly right.
And as long as our people believe in cartoonist myths like Willie Lynch or biblical prophecy, we will not liberate ourselves. To liberate ourselves, we must gain a clear and concise understanding of what's being done to us.
Right.
Because if our understanding is flawed, then our remedies that temper that misunderstanding will also be flawed. We must study psychological warfare. We must study the systems they use. It's called the mass gaslighting warfare.
I like
that. Our manufactured consent to mistreat. It's our people need to wake up. And what I say to those people who insist on believing in Willie Lynch or biblical prophecy, I say this. If you have you would not use an operating software on your modern PC from the 1980s. You would not. So we have to upgrade our knowledge. We cannot continue to try to liberate ourselves believing things that slaves were forced to accept. We must recognize that we are being socially engineered to think in ways that serve the white society.
Okay.
It is no stretch. Okay, I'll stop. Go on.
I got you. I like that. I like that. I think one of the things that I like what you said, and that's so true. And a lot of times the way this is being done by the larger society is in a way subtle. So if you don't study it and we don't sit down and discuss it, our people lose it and we can't see what it is because of the fact of the way it's being done subtly. This is historical. It's rooted deep in the beginning. It's what Brother Pugh said, and I said just now. It's stamped from the beginning. Let me give you an example. Let me get you there. There's a question I used to always ask my students. You go in the grocery store to buy some pancakes mix because you want to cook some pancakes. Pancakes, you know, pancakes. On the shelf is a box up there with a black woman and with a head tied around her head, a rag tied around her head. And by the way, it is the number one selling pancake mix in America. And she's got this rag tied around. What is it about that box? And say maybe, for instance, you have never eaten pancakes before. You want to try to find the best one to eat. What is it about that box that makes you grab it and decide, this is the pancakes I want? This is going to taste the best. I like these pancakes. And to kind of support what I've been saying, there are others who have followed suit. Somebody's realized that Aunt Jemima pancakes was taking over all of the sales. They created one called Miss Butterworth. And they went even a step further and got her a little bit plump on the side and tied the rag around her head the same way, and even made her into syrup. They created Miss Butterworth syrup. And so when you go to the counter and you grab that, you say, oh, yeah, I want this. So that is obviously that stamp from the beginning that is still permeating itself in the psyche of America. Uncle Ben Rice, what in the world would make you buy feel that rice is the best rice for you to buy? What is it psychologically that has created that? And as you said, Brother Franklin, it's the matrix of American life, that fabric that is weaved into ourselves that makes us make that kind of a move. And
yes, we are being totally mass manipulated, and it goes back to the Tavistock Institute of Human Behavior.
Yes,
and a mass manipulation expert named Edward Bernays.
Right.
The Tavistock Institute of Human Behavior called Bernays their prophet. Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he was the one who took his uncle Sigmund Freud's study of the mind and used it for manipulating the masses. Bernays said that we are now able to control the masses without them even knowing it. In fact, Bernays' campaign, this goes all the way back, the marketing campaigns that are based on Bernays' studies. Bernays was the one who impressed the ruling elite of how you can control the masses. In fact, during the 1930s, cigarette smoking, for example, was considered taboo among women. So the tobacco industry realized that there was a multi-million dollars out there to be made if you can get women to start smoking. So they hired Brené, and Brené did a campaign where these women was at a Macy's parade, and they a lot of their cigarettes, and he put it in all these magazines, and he called it the torch of freedom. He equated cigarette smoking as liberation for women, and that propaganda campaign got millions of women smoking.
Right. That's right.
Brené also was responsible for what they started putting fluoride in toothpaste, for example. Toothpaste was a poison that was used for a long time. When they started putting in toothpaste, there was this backlash among the public. So again, they hired Brené, and Brené did a campaign making fluoride do something positive. He also did it for bacon. Bacon at the time was throwaway meat. It wasn't a part of a staple for breakfast. They hired Brené and started doing a campaign. So this ability of manipulating the minds of the masses through information, it is a true science. In the 1960s, when black revolt started increasing, they started a program against black people,
right,
a program to prevent us from protesting. They started using a mass manipulation system. They control the education we're taught, the media images we see, and the style narrative we hear. So this allows them to shape our minds to think the way that serve their interests.
Right.
It is no strange coincidence that many black people are now self-hating, perceive themselves as their own worst enemy,
exactly,
and revere white in spite of their real history to the contrary. This is all the result of social engineering scientists and propaganda designers. We are being manipulated by these men.
That's exactly right. And for those who think that we are talking crazy, and that this ain't got nothing to do with anything, you're incorrect, because you need to open your eyes a minute, and you really can see it all around you every day. One of the biggest promoters of what Brother Franklin Jones was just saying right now is the advertising world. They use this all the time to deal with you. They use Pavlov's theory, which wasn't necessarily about mind control when he did it. It was about the physiology of an animal. But one of the things you do is you create and control people's response. I remember once I talked to a guy when I was living in Wisconsin, and he had a Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise. And I asked him, I said, oh, that's great. I said, let me ask you something about Kentucky Fried Chicken. I said, why is it that every time you pass by, you can smell that chicken a block away? He said, because we have to buy ducts. We have to buy air ducts that specifically suck the air out of the kitchen so that smell goes out into the public. And when you pass by, you smell that chicken, and then you say, oh, yeah, I want me some chicken. And you go back. That's deliberately done. We know the story about the movie theater, when you would be sitting in the movie and all of a sudden a flash of popcorn would flash on the screen. You couldn't see it physically, but your mind sees it. And it's a second, almost less than a second, a figment of a second. And that would obviously spark your thought. Again, Pavlov's salivating dogs, to make you say, oh, let me go get me some popcorn. I'm hungry. And they do it all the time on TV. They show you food and sandwiches and look at the stuff. I mean, I love fish, and I like fish. And I know we're here in Atlanta, Captain D's is a big thing. They flash that fish in front of your eyes and crab cakes, and they have the juice stuff running all out of it. You know, and all of a sudden you say, man, I want me some fish. And that's it's not funny, but that's the manipulation that is placed on us. Let me ask you, Brother Pugh. Programs like Brother Franklin Jones's program, the Black People Matrix, programs like Brother Oshie, African Spectre, Brother Elliot, a lot of other ones, books like Kehinde's and others, we were pounding away trying to get African people to understand, trying to provide them the notes from the Brain Trust. The Brain Trust has looked at this already. They've researched that. Marcus Garvey knows that that's what happened. And he tried to tell us that. He tried to get you to focus on something else. Brother Marumbiani wrote a whole history of white psychology in a book called Yorugu. And the brother that we just read in the Ancestral Profile, Brother Cambone, He created the whole Florida A&M department to study the mind, how to get African people to respond. Brother Pugh, why aren't black folk listening? What is the problem?
No, I mean, but it's the same way that when you talk about advertising and branding. I remember myself personally, there was an ad that came on television. And every time the ad came on, I got very impatient, and I wished the ad would go off because it just seemed irrelevant to me.
Right.
And then after watching the ad about 8 or 10 times, on about the 10th time, I realized that not only was that ad relevant to me, but that was one of the most important ads I could possibly hear. So one of the issues is that, you know, when you got a complex idea like, you know, like Marimba Arni's Yorugu or what Dr. Cambone was doing or anybody else, that's not something you can tell somebody one time and they got that.
Right.
In other words,
right.
That's something that's going to require sustained effort over time. You see, in fact, Mr. Jones talked about the Willie Lynch model and, you know, biblical prophecy. Well, you know that, you know, you treat it, you know, you're given treatments of biblical prophecy at least once a week, right?
Right.
Because
they
understand, first of all, it may wear off. Secondly, you may not have got it all, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying is that one of the things, once you develop a protocol, then you need to have the resources to be able to implement that protocol.
Yes,
and obviously we haven't had the resources to have a sustained effort.
That's exactly right. Which is one of the ideas and programs that we promoted here on the Black Reality Think Tank about this community school idea, attempting to start something like that and obviously being able to continue it, which is key. Because you're right about that, Brother Pugh. The black church clearly does that. The black church will hammer away at it. And one of the giants of black theology, and a lot of people don't give him credit for this, is Bishop Mason of the Church of God in Christ. Bishop Mason created a theological worship process in terms of getting worship service. And there's a lot of things in that worship service, that whole catalog of ways to pass the message through, that he uses that deal with psychology. And one of them is to repeat stuff 3 times. And so you will hear them say things like, amen, amen, amen. That's a psychological process that was created out of the Church of God in Christ, and other religions too, the others have done. The burning of the incense, the ringing of the bell, and all of these are matters to get people's minds programming into this. As Brother Jones has said, that's that black matrix. Brother Jones, very much on your program, I have heard you hammer away at black folk. So let me ask you kind of the same question. Why are we not hearing this? Why is it that they are not waking up, or our people are not waking up to understand that you're being bamboozled?
You know, it's very much like, let me use current times, it's very much like the Mueller Report. The Mueller Report was written as a 400-page,
right,
and most Americans haven't read it, right? So they're trying to get Mueller on television so they'll hear it actually being put into action, being put into words, so you can put it in the news, you can put it out. To just write books about what's happening to our people, it's not enough. We have to create, I was trained in psychological warfare by the U.S. government and the military.
Okay.
So I consider myself sort of the spook who's set by the door, okay?
Right.
In the military, they teach that the only way to fight propaganda is with counter-propaganda. So we have to spread our truth. We must use the media as a platform, as a platform to spread our information, memes, short stories. We will continually spread unrelentingly to the masses, explain to our people what's happening. If it's a book that's sitting on a shelf, if it's a book that's sitting in the bookstore, that's not enough. We have to create an ideology, catch the ideology, and spread the ideology. In the same manner as the Willie Lynch has been spread by millions of African-Americans,
yes,
we must create an ideology based upon truth. And we must share that ideology, package that ideology, and spread it among our people.
Right.
Free.
Right.
That's how we will bring change. I had developed a page I call the original Black Matrix page. I was followed by 200,000 people. I had 400,000 visitors a week.
Beautiful.
Facebook told me that I want to keep them. They made me give IDs. IDs, my two legal IDs to stay on Facebook. They eventually shut it down. But that's the way of getting the information out. You just keep spreading the information, explaining to our people what's being done to them.
Right.
You know, and I believe that it's easy to kill a man, but it's more difficult to kill an ideology that is based upon facts, evidence, common sense, and critical thinking. We must give our people the option to against the lies that they currently believe. Because as you know, our government has two faces. There's a public face, then there's a shadow government.
Right.
And the shadow government believes it is their duty to prevent Black dissent. So they deliberately spread propaganda into our community to keep us demoralized, divided, and self-hating. This keeps us from unifying against the white society. So we who know better, there's an African proverb, those who know must teach.
Right.
And a speaker of truth has no friends. We must continue to propagate. And something else they taught me in psychological warfare and propaganda and military. The person spreading the counter-propaganda, don't get into arguments with people. You just keep spreading the propaganda. You just keep spreading the counter-propaganda. You just keep spreading it every day, every day. And I live my life doing that, always spreading counter-propaganda.
Right.
And so we can do it.
Yep.
We must use the internet like it's a modern African drum to share our truth to the masses.
Right. Okay.
And early when Brother Q was talking about those who believe that we are inferior, to believe that Black people are inferior, you have to function based upon the false narrative that white society creates. There's a system called Orwellian propaganda. Societies do not function based upon facts nor reality. They function based upon the narratives that are fed into society. Because white people create the narratives that are fed into our society, they continually feed narratives into our society that exalt themselves and vilify and marginalize Black people. But if our people knew the truth, I'll give you an example. And it's in our mind all the time. Every time we turn the light on, for example, we subconsciously we believe we owe it to Thomas Edison for lighting up the world. Well, Thomas Edison lit up the world. But in reality, when Thomas Edison patterned his light bulb, it was inefficient. It often didn't even burn it for an hour. The true man who brought light to the world was an African American named Louis Latimer. When he invented his light bulb, it was his light bulb that was mass patterned, mass produced, and it was he who was dispatched around the world to install light bulbs. But our society functions based upon the false narrative that exalts whites. Anyone who believes in white superiority are functioning based upon those false narratives. Because whites distort facts, they distort history, all to falsely exalt themselves.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yes. And their social scientists describe this as instilling a value system into the minds of non-whites that makes us more compliant with white dominance over our lives. Our people have to study societal social engineering. That's what our people need to study.
Right. I agree 100%. Brothers and sisters, I want to just say that you really may not realize how critical this discussion is in terms of the work that must be done for our liberation. You have to understand this. Things that are being said so far, Brother Pugh, Brother Jones, and what they are bringing to this discussion, because of the fact that if we waste our time on stuff that has nothing to do with anything, and it's surely not going to propel us forward, you can never write a very clear agenda for change. And I think that's what we have to do. We've got to assess that carefully, and we must do it as a community. We must not leave anybody out, regardless of what their understanding or their orientation might be. They got to be brought into this discussion. And we have to really continue it. We've got to do it on an ongoing basis. As I said, because it's been done to us every day. Television, motion pictures, music, records, books, everything, and the internet's really, really just wrecking havoc right now. It's got sisters, some of our beautiful black sisters, using that medium in a narcissistic way, but it's being done to promote beauty, which has nothing to do with nothing. And they're shaking and twigging and all kind of stuff that has nothing to do with anything. And so we've got to bring folk back home to our sisters. You know, I want to open up to our audience. We've got a few people on that I know that have some things they want to put. But before I do, I want you to listen to a very brief interview that was done with Dr. Derrick Bell. Dr. Derrick Bell is was a Harvard law professor. He is an ancestor now. But he wrote a book called Faces at the Bottom of the Well. And he said in there, the basic thesis I indicated earlier was that racism is permanent. So that was an interview that was done with him during the life of his work. And he kind of responded to that. So I want to hear that briefly. And then when we come back, we're going to open up to the audience, see what they have to say about this subject.
What advice would you give to young African Americans today about activism, about their future? Anything that you want to say about that?
I think sort of an updated version of what my parents told me, that you need to be the best person you can, even in the face of all of this, and don't try to, you know, sugarcoat it. I don't think my own children, it was so hard to get across what my parents got across to me. One of my sons said once when he's young, "Dad, you and Mom keep talking about this racism. What's that got to do with me?" And of course, because they're living in a nice middle-class house, our kids never, they always had the children's bathroom. We raised, three children, two parents, one bathroom, you know. But we went someplace and stayed at a cottage. And they came back, "This is our room. But Mom, Dad, where's our bathroom?" He said, so it's much harder for them but I think it's very important. And I kid, I chide Lenora Filani. I said, "You're really getting them through college, and many of them then are through high school, and many of them going on to college. What about the glass ceilings and the discriminatory treatment and everything?" "Oh," she said, "we'll take care of that in some time."
So let's take care of what's going on.
Yeah, let's get them educated first.
But does it, in terms of the young African Americans, and in relationship to your pessimism about advances during the Civil Rights Movement, the Brown versus Board, all that, is there some reality they need to deal with?
Somebody
move along here.
They say, people ask me in book readings, You're too discouraging for our young people. But it's like racism is permanent, you know, which is my mind. I think that telling the truth as you see it is never discouraging. It can be enlightening to really know this little white guy up in Boston, who must be in his late 80s now, but is still on the case. And he wrote me after he read The Faces at the Bottom of the Well, talking about this permanence of racism. He said, Derek, when Howard Seldon is his name. He said, "Derek, you know, when people used to ask me how long is racism going to last, I would say 400 years. But I wouldn't believe it, and it wouldn't be satisfying to them." And he said, "Then I read your book," and he said, I got it. Racism is permanent. It's always going to be here." And he said he was free. He was going. He'd been fighting. He had this little office. I guess he had some trust money. He had this little civil rights office. He'd been running for years. And now he's going to all his friends, and he said, racism is permanent. He said he recognized that if you looked at it that way, then when you had a little success, you could celebrate it. But when you had the setbacks, the defeats, you weren't defeated, you see. Because this was part of the thing. You kept going. He said that his example was the alcoholic. That in order for the alcoholic going to the various sessions to start getting a grip on it, is to stand and say, I am John Jones, I'm an alcoholic, I will always be a...
To our broadcast today for African Heritage Month, our theme, as you know, in the spirit of Injia and search of the way we must be every day. We welcome today Dr. John Henrik Clark on the question of a proper education. Good morning, Dr.
You
Clark.
Are listening
Good
to
morning,
Black
and
Reality
thank you again.
With host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We're back, brothers and sisters. This is the Black Reality Think Tank. Today we are talking about, in a sense, the permanence of racism. We're asking the question, why is it that black folk are really getting so upset when we hear talk from people like Trump and all these other ones that deal with that? Why is it? What is it about racism that we don't understand that makes us have to react in that way? And so what we've decided to do is to review the notes from our brain trust. And a brain trust is a group of individuals who have studied and considered an idea, and they bring it back to our peoples to implement change and to implement new agenda. And we have a very, 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 very powerful brain trust in America. Very powerful, both ancestrally, elderly, and contemporary. We got some young folk who are part of that powerful brain trust. And so what we're trying to do is to pull on that brain trust so that we can do better. The Black Reality Think Tank airs every Tuesday from 8 to 10. We have some other programs that also air, Time for an Awakening, Friday and Saturday with Brother Elliot. Friday and Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday from 8 to 10 and on Sunday from 7 to 10 Eastern Time. We have African Perspectives on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with Brother Oshie. We have the Black People Matrix, who is hosted by Brother Franklin Jones, who is on tonight as one of our guests. That program airs every Monday, Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 3. Acres of Diamonds on Monday from 6 p.m. to 8. Let's Buy Black 365, Monday from 8 p.m. to 9. Revive by POC every Wednesday from 8 to 10. Relationships with Joy and Troy every Thursday from 7 p.m. To 8 p.m. And Saturday Sports Talk, which airs from 10 to noon on every Saturday. So this is the lineup for the Time for an Awakening system. We have a call-in number that you can always use, 215 area code 490-9832. You can call in, join the conversation, or just use it to listen. And we always welcome you. We have an archive system that you can go on by going to www.timeforanawakening.com and access any of the programs. Matter of fact, our program tonight is going to be on our archive tomorrow. I'm going to put this up tomorrow, and you'll be able to grasp it from Facebook. You can go to my Facebook page at Time for an Awakening. I'm sorry, at Black Reality Think Tank is a Facebook page. And you can access those programs as well as see some of the corresponding material around the subjects and things that we talk about. And we obviously very clearly welcome you. Let's go to our audience. Let's open up and see what they have to say. Got my dear brother from Atlanta, 404-453. My brother, let me ask you, is racism permanent as the way you see it?
First of all, I want to thank you, man, for this show you got.
Yes, sir.
And I'm just like my man, Nelly Fuller, man. Only way it's gonna be could be permanent is if we let it.
Okay.
All right. It's up to us. See, if man created this poison, man could take it down.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it, man.
So name one step from your perspective that we could do to change it? Is there anything that you have thought about maybe that you could share with us?
Well, number one, I don't celebrate none of the hellish holidays. Okay? Right. None of them, man. Not none.
Okay.
None of them. Because every time you look at the holidays, it's something they're covering up, man. And so, and it always, the holidays is always celebrating what they did to us.
I got you.
I try not to celebrate none of them, man. None, not none.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I appreciate that, my brother. I think definitely always appreciate your input. And stay with us. My brother, Philadelphia, Brother Timothy. Brother Timothy, let me start off and ask you, is racism permanent from your perspective?
Yes, sir, Dr. Rogers, but when there's racism out there and it's affecting us, the only way to deal with it is to fight it. I'll give you a perfect example. My friend, his name by birth is Mark Brown. His name is now Malik Mubashir. He was there with Barack Obama when Barack Obama was a law student at Harvard. My friend Malik got his undergraduate degree from Harvard, and he got his master's degree from Divinity. He was working on his master's degree from Divinity, and so was Derek Bell. He told me about the fights that they had at Harvard while Derek Bell was there. That's how I learned about Derek Bell many, many years ago. And that book talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. And I respect Bell and his position. But I'm going to put myself in this place right now and tell you about something that I've been going through dealing with racism now. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend of mine, and she's an educator, and we started around the same time. And she's a very good friend of mine. Matter of fact, she has made me the godfather of her goddaughter. As a result of that, of course, her daughter got her undergraduate degree from Lincoln. She got her master's degree from Westchester. Mm-hmm. Her children love me. They really do. The son graduated from Lincoln in December. He finished his coursework. And she's from Louisiana. And she's a very attractive young lady. Her hair is a certain way. Her complexion is light. Her hair is, I call all good hair from black people good hair. But just recently, I missed a trip going to Ghana. So I got, and there's 100 friends, 100 people I know going, and there's no more room. I'm just tied up with so many things. And they're going there. They may purchase land. They're doing there for a certain amount of time. It's like I want to hook up with Tony Browder and Kwesi. Sometimes I can't do these things so much. So she said to me, she said, Tim, because we had a Juneteenth parade not too long ago. I think I told you about it. And, you know, I don't just wear my garments for that. It's not a costume to me. I may wear my garments tomorrow. Whatever I'm going to do, I might wear my
Brother
European
Timothy, can you get right to that point? Can you get right to the point?
My point is that she says, Tim, you're going to Ghana. You know, she tells me right now, she says, Tim, I don't like Africans. Listen to this. And I don't want nothing to do with them. Something happened to her why she doesn't like her. So, but when it comes to her children, everything I talk about, they like it because she says, when I talk about our experiences on this phone and dealing with African people and people that are like us and like mine, she said, I romanticize it. So I'm saying to you, I want to do the best that I can to teach the people in my community about Africa and all this Afrocentric about black people loving each other. But you know what she told me? What you're doing for my children is good, but it's not for me. Okay. I realized in my quest.
Does that surprise you?
Huh?
Does that surprise you that people think like that out there?
No, I'm just saying that it shocks me. What shocks me about it is that they can look, they see themselves as black, but when you tell them to do black things, they don't want to do it.
Okay.
That's my point. And I'm saying we can do this and do it as much as we can with some of our people. Some of my people are not going to get it.
Right.
I just can't get it to come around. So okay. We talk about something else.
Okay.
That's deep.
Right. I got you.
This is educated, too. And she loves herself and her people. But some things she don't want to touch when it comes to black people.
Right.
And we got to get over that. How do we do that? I repeatedly romanticized it. She said, Tim, you make me feel bad because I went to BU. I said, I make you feel bad. So I can't get you to get out of your European mindset.
Okay. I got you. That makes sense. That makes sense. And I understand that, that you know, that goes. We got a lot of our people asleep, Brother Timothy. You know that. And they haven't woken up yet. That's one of the things we're trying to say to pale people. Wake up. Wake up. That's what the brain trust is telling you. You sleep. You gotta wake up. You got to recapture your mind. You lost it, as Brother Bridges said. You know, we sleep. Come on, fella. And then, and I think once we do wake up, you know, we might see, you know, a better results. But very clearly right now, a lot of our people are asleep. I think about, and it's, the book doesn't necessarily reflect a lot of what we're talking about, but symbolically, the title does support what we're talking about. And that's the story where Washington Irving, the European writer, wrote a book called Rip Van Winkle. And Rip went to sleep 20 years. And then when he finally woke up, he didn't know where the hell he was. He had to reorientate himself. And I think that's what we have to help our people. We got to wake them up, and then you're going to have to reorientate them to get back on track of what we really have to do. Okay, I'm not sure everybody that's on, I'm not sure if you want to say something, but I just be courteous and give you an opportunity. There's a 919-768 caller. Would you care to say anything, or are you just listening?
Yes, good evening, Dr. Rogers. It's good to hear your
my
voice
brother.
Again.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
So glad to hear from you, man. So glad to hear from you.
Yeah.
What's your thought on this? Is permanent? Is racism permanent?
I would say that aggressive, belligerent behavior on the part of white people is permanent.
Okay.
You can call it racism if you want to, but white people were doing these same things to themselves before they even knew us. So it's just a form of behavior, and we just victims of it.
Right.
And they're never going to stop doing that. That's never going to change. There's nothing you can do to change that or change their mind. You can't show them anything. You can't reach any level or anything like that.
Right, right.
They for whatever type of, well, like Marin Bani said, the incomplete being. They got that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's never going to change. And what we can do, like the brother said, is inform our people as much as we possibly can. There's so much misinformation out here.
Yes.
That Europeans have 10 to maybe 100 times more access to information than what we have. So we dealing with changing something that's already been implemented, and sometimes that's very difficult.
Okay.
You know, so if we could, you know, black people have to go to school. We don't run our schools for the most part.
Right.
And the reason we have to go to school is so that a European paradigm can be introduced to us so that we will respond to that instead of responding to our own needs.
Okay. I agree.
Part of what you was talking about earlier in the media, you can turn on the news any day of the week, and you'll see a story about a little white boy that saw that people was hungry and homeless, and so he started a little lemonade stand and took the money and contributed to the homeless people.
Right.
All these kind of white hero worship stories.
Right.
To put them in the light of how kind and how generous and how helpful they are.
Okay.
It happens. It's been happening since television began. If you go back to, a lot of people might not know, the old days of Father Knows Best.
Yes.
And
yes.
Ozzy and Harriet and Leave It to Beaver. You could never relate their parents of those people to a slave master.
Right.
So that's the image that they gave you of the kindly, gentle white man.
Mm-hmm.
Far, far away from that auction block that you talked about.
Right, exactly.
So it was just a show, a little half an hour comedy show, but it had a different, another purpose to it.
Yes, it did.
Yes, and, it did. And it goes on every day and whatnot. And this is the kind of thing that we're trying to combat, what the brother was talking about using the internet. These are the kind of things that we have to try to combat. So you have to try to change a person's mind.
Right.
Young people see themselves as, I got to lift myself up. I got to do better. I got to move up. I got to move out, you know, and they get caught up in the materialism.
Right.
So they want to get away from the ghetto. They want to get away from the problems of, quote unquote, being black.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
But if you're in a car with your family and the car runs off the road and everybody's incapacitated except for you, you get out of that car and you go out and you get help and you bring that help back.
Okay. Okay.
We don't see ourselves as coming back. We see ourselves as getting away from this.
Getting away from it. That's true. You're right. You're right about that. Okay.
That's what we taught. Get away from this.
Right. Right. I agree.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Brother White. I appreciate that comment. I missed you, and I definitely encourage you to continue to listen for us. I always appreciate your input. I was in the Bull City last weekend, but it was really a quick turnaround. I went to a funeral, so I was in and out.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was there, so I was supposed to try to get together with Brother Bridges, but I didn't hear from him. So next time when I come back, I'll make sure I'm gonna look you up too. And
I appreciate that. I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, now look where we can break bread together somehow or the other.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother White. Please continue to listen. Thank you.
Okay. You are.
Sister Bernisawa, I know you said you may not feel up to talking, but I just wanted to be courteous and make sure that you don't have something to say. Is there anything you'd like to add to this discussion?
Well, it was too good to not add something.
Okay.
This was good. This was excellent. First, I'm going to talk about a solution that we can all participate in.
Yes.
I hate the word. I don't want to use the word solution, not hate, but let's say a strategy that we can use, because we can really use some improvement in strategic moves.
Okay.
As a people.
Right.
So one strategy that everybody on this call and everybody listening can do is to help promote this program. Let everybody that you know about this program, and then tell them to let everybody that they know about this program.
Right.
You're an historian. You teach so many wonderful things. You have wonderful guests on. One can wake up by listening to one program.
Right.
One can learn a whole lot by listening to one program, and then they'll want to listen to another. So that's one thing we can all do.
Okay. That's true.
I agree. And it's quite doable.
Thank you.
With social media and all of that. So I was just thinking that, we as a people globally have had everything thrown at us, including the kitchen sink. You know, physical terrorism, psychological terrorism, you know, poverty, all the different phases of a Holocaust. So much has happened to us. As I said before, we're suffering mentally because of it. And we have got to deal with our mindset.
Yes.
No matter what we talk about, we've got to heal the mind. And you referenced Brother Bruce earlier, that mind devastation, we've got to deal with that.
Right.
That's a requirement. If we don't do that, then nothing else is possible.
I agree.
Because, yes, racism, it will always exist as long as Europeans with their pathology, as long as they exist, racism will exist.
Okay.
A snake is a snake, no matter where they are, whether they, invade Africa or Australia, take people from wherever and bring them here. Whatever they do, they're still snakes.
Right.
So we cannot expect that to change. If we expect that to change, then we have to examine our minds.
Okay.
Now, I was watching, so that's just a fact that we have to face.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, it really is. The other thing is Christianity. I will keep talking about it. I was in a church for 25 years, and the pacifist messages, the slave sermons, have done us great harm.
Yes.
Can you imagine how many soldiers and warriors we would have if we were taught to stand up and fight together and work together and teach each other instead of being taught to wait for Jesus, and we'll be caught up while all the other sinners, you know, are going to go to hell and all that nonsense.
Right.
Can you imagine how many warriors we would have?
Right.
You
That's
know,
right.
if we got them out these the mega churches.
And
so,
we've got to continue to address the black church issue. We really do. As a matter of fact,
we have to. It helped us to survive.
Right.
And you know, and there's some spiritual principles. You mentioned that recently that are universal. So, you know, that ain't no big deal. It's in every
right.
spiritual system.
Right.
But it's done a tremendous amount of damage. I've watched it. I see it in my own family.
Right. Next week, we're going to deal with the black church.
Ooh, I want to get in on that because,
yeah, okay.
You know, of course, you know, the black church will discourage reading about anything but Jesus.
Right.
But nobody, how is anybody going to learn anything
okay.
when your pastor is telling you the only one you need is Jesus? That's
right.
very serious. You know, they're carrying on the brain dirting of white supremacy. So, Dr. Rogers, I watched Eyes on the Prize finally.
Oh, good.
Last
Excellent.
Night.
Excellent.
I watched a first episode.
Okay.
And as I watch our ancestors, our brothers and sisters, doing the bus boycott.
Right. Yeah, that was.
And as I watch, you know, I think I was born a year after the Montgomery boycott. But I watched as our people decided to walk. Everybody boycotted the buses.
They
Everybody
sure did.
Did.
They sure did.
And I watched it with my mouth hanging open because I said, look at what we did.
Yeah.
We're not as disempowered as we believe we are. We're just so divided that we can't do the things that would help set us free.
Okay.
Imagine if we could pull together and do that now the next time a black man got killed or a black woman.
Right. That's right.
That had impact.
Sure
but
was.
You know that we can't do that today.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate, but we would not be able to mobilize our people today
mm-hmm.
to do that level of boycott. Well, I ain't walking nowhere. I got a someone's new car. I mean, we just wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great lesson. That's a great film for us to watch
right.
and begin to discuss. How can we get back to that? At least talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. One of the universities in Wisconsin, which was a Milwaukee Area Technical College, used to have a program called College of the Air, and they would. This was an opportunity to give people in the community a chance to go to college and learn and take courses without having to come to the classroom. It was one day out of the week we go to classroom. Well, anyway, the Eyes on the Prize was taught through the College of the Air, and I had the honor of being able to teach that for 2 years. And a lot of Caucasians would register to take that class. Then, like I said, we would come together once during the month, to meet and discuss and get questions or clear up anything they saw in those films. And you would be surprised at some of the stuff they said. But anyway, we don't have time for that. I just wanted to mention that on the Eyes on the Prize. So it is a powerful teaching tool. It really was a powerful teaching tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
A quick question. So the College in the Air, that's an excellent idea. You know, it's something we need to teach people who are not, you know, necessarily interested in college. We got to have places where we could teach our people.
Yeah.
As I always say, 9 to 90. So what about the percentage of black people that came to those classes?
It was probably 70-30. 30% black, 70% whites.
You see?
Yeah.
That's an indication that we have some healing to do.
Yeah, we do. You do. Yeah, we sure do.
You teach African drums. You teach African dancing. If you look at who's taking those classes, whites are.
Right. Exactly.
They're establishing schools for drumming. All of our culture, they're being initiated as priests. They're just doing what they usually do. They're vampiring, you know, our culture and our ways, and while we're running from it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we got work to do on ourselves.
Okay.
On ourselves. It's an inside job.
I agree. Okay. I want to go back to our guests, and I thank them for peaceful. I think I might have lost Brother Franklin. So, Brother Pugh, you're going to barefoot it with you a minute. Brother Pugh, you know, I wanted to ask you, you know, on the computer programs, you know, particular Windows, there's a little button up there that says trash. And you a lot of times you stuff that you throw out or discard on your program, it goes up into that trash basket. And that trash basket gets full. And so you have to go up there and empty the trash. Is that what we need to do in our computer brain? And if so, how do we empty the trash? You know, on the computer, obviously, there's just a button and an app. You go up there, hit it, and the trash goes into a basket. It doesn't go away, I understand. It's still somewhere in your back there in that subconscious computer brain. But how do we need to look at something like that? And so how do we pull that together? And I just thought about that's a good analogy or symbol to kind of help understand how do we get rid of the trash that comes at us all the time.
Well, actually, we don't need to get rid of the trash because our brain has infinite capacity.
Okay.
But you know, the whole concept of neuroplasticity says that if you don't use something, you lose something.
Right.
And the whole idea of, you know, you talked about C.H. Mason and, you know, the repetition in his sermons and so on, is that, one, you know, their techniques, repetition and so on. In other words, the things that you do repeatedly, those are things that, you know, become easier to recall. And so
right.
So I would say that's one. One of the things that I do is that I pay attention to good writers. That is, in other words, if there's a guy who's going to tell me something and give me a good treatment of a topic and going to do it in 30 words, and then there's another guy who's going to give me that same treatment of that topic, but they're going to take, you know, two or three chapters, I'd rather use the 30 words because I don't have the capacity to just sit there and just read, you know, all day and all night. And by the way, in that connection, you know, we began this discussion talking about Ibram Kendi's book, Stamped at the Beginning.
Right.
That book is excellently written.
Yes,
if you're somebody like me, I'm an engineer who really wasn't trained in sociology and philosophy and all of those other kinds of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really interested in what is the source of the kind of ideas that are running around in your society and why do people think the way they think or you know, I heard Sister Benicia was talking about, or actually it might have been Brother Jones talking about passivity, people, you know, being, oh, no, it was Sister Benicia, with the ideal of, you know, being encouraged to be passive and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things is Dr. Kendi does an excellent job of succinctly showing you where all these ideas are coming from,
right.
How they manifested themselves. Oh, and let me just add in this little final thing. There's a ton of things I could say about Derrick Bell and Harvard and Barack Obama and all that, but I'll just mention one thing, but I just forgot it just that quickly. Here it is. One of the things about, you know, the book Faces at the Bottom of the Well,
yes.
You know, one of the issues there, you know, if you were trying to fly an airplane and you tried one technique and the plane crashed, you know, you wouldn't give up. If you looked at the Wright brothers, I mean, they tried hundreds and, you know, they tried, you know, I don't know how many different times.
Right, right.
And so if you listen to And We Are Not Saved and Faces at the Bottom of the Well and the other work of Derrick Bell, what you're going to find is that it was a very, very narrow subset of actions that they took. That, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, had made the Brown versus Board decision. Black people had assumed that, you know, that meant that the game was, you know, was wide open for them to participate in the society. But at the same time, you had massive resistance, you know, orchestrated by, you know, Senator Bilbo from Mississippi. And you had Northerners who didn't mind people in the South having to do things with black people, but they didn't want that to happen in their own home. And so what I'm saying is that I understand Dr. Bell's sentiment, you know, in the sense that because what he said was that he felt that white people were disingenuous, that, you know, they were saying they were concerned about, you know, helping black people, but they really weren't.
They really are.
And I'm saying that, you know, if you read Ibram Kendi, you'd be disabused of all that, because his analysis of this, of the history of this country and the history of the black response to the kind of things we've been subjected to is so deep that you'll no longer have that kind of, you know, man, if this don't work, can't nothing work. You'll realize just how complex the problem is.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because very clearly, one of the things that Kehinde does that I like, he explains the fact that the old ancient Euro world, how they were introduced to African people came from writings of explorers and those that were circumventing the world and thought what they saw. When the explorers went down into Africa, they said they thought they saw walking gorillas in the water fishing. And they weren't sure, but they said they looked like gorillas. And we didn't want to take a chance and go to shore, so we passed them by. And they wrote that in their diaries, and those diaries become the geography books of the European world. And so the Euro world will begin to form their analysis and imagery of African people from folk who saw stuff that didn't know what they were looking at. So it's a naivety kind of thing, what happened, even to the point when the Africans came onto the plantations. The Thomas Jeffersons and all of them who were sitting around watching, trying to figure out if these are people or are these animals. And Jefferson has a book called Notes from Virginia. And he wrote down in his book all of the notes and what he saw. And one of the things that they focused on was that the African looked like an ape. And if he wasn't an ape, he came from the ape family, and obviously evolved into a more human-like person, but he was still an ape. And so we talked about the book from Jamaica, The History of Jamaica, that was written by Edward Long. And Long went so far as to say that the gorillas procreated with the African women because the gorillas thought they were gorillas too. And Kehinde talks about the literature that was focused on the sexuality of the Africans and the ape. And so it's an ugly history, but this is the reality of the history that was passed on down. So when whoever that was, and I don't remember who it was, called Michelle Obama, based on her hips, like a gorilla or something, that's what he was referring to. He was referring to the history books and what his ancestors had told him about Africans. So this is how deeply embedded, and so we're talking about ending that by writing a grant or marching up and down the street. You're not going to end that like that because that's embedded into the psychology of the Euro world, and you can't get away from that. And even though Jefferson was having sex with a black woman, she had been watered down a little bit, and so she was close to being a mulatto. And so she looked a little bit more like them. And that's the kind of history and the process that you have to follow. Ladies and gentlemen, as usual, the time has come to an end. We're going to deal with this some more because it's an electric kind of subject that requires a lot of time to discuss. We're going to have to deal with it some more. Next week, we're going to talk about the black church and where is this role in the liberation movement. What role does it have, if any? And we're going to have both clergy and lay come on and provide their perspective. We appreciate you for joining us here. We've had a dynamic program. We ask that you join us again next week for our electric show. Have a wonderful week, and we will see you on next Tuesday.
Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as free, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as free, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us. Black is free.